los latinos anden despertando. Abre los ojos para ver lo que está pasando.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back, Latino Free Minds, episode number 27. We're here again with a congressional candidate for District 18 in California, Peter Hernandez. You know, it's good to have him back on the show again. How you doing, Peter?
I'm good, thanks, Danny. Two Dannys, right? Danny and Daniel. Yeah, I'm really good. Thank you for having me back.
Cool. How you doing, Danny?
Doing good. Busy at work. I'm still here at the office. That's why you see this background. That's not really my house.
Beautiful home.
Yeah. They don't need to know. Cool. But yeah, we wanted to have you on again, Peter, to kind of, you know, talk about your campaign and kind of the things that you're mainly focused on, right? I guess the way I could put it is like your four or five top issues or key items that when when you're campaigning, you're going to be campaigning on. Because I think even though, you know, I think people got to understand that even though you're running for a district in California, you know, putting you in Congress is going to help the entire nation out. Right. Because your vote is going to not just affect the people in District 18, but everybody else. And, you know, that's one of the reasons that, you know, as the podcast or lead, we, you know, endorse you because, you know, you're a good guy and you are going in the right direction, so to speak. I think you're in it for the right reasons. And I believe Danny agrees with me when I say that. But yeah, we kind of wanted to go maybe four or five of the key points that you wanted to touch on for your campaign.
Awesome. Yeah, I mean, I'd love that for us to be free flowing because I love feedback. I mean, at the end of the day, we're getting better every day at connecting with the voters. I mean, so when I think about the what are the things that need to be dealt with, you know, I when I get into Congress, I would argue the number one thing is the freedom the public has to be successful, right? And that's not an overgeneralization because there's different things attached to that, right? And I'll touch on those things, but you know, right off the bat, the economy, you know, the fact that we have been so climate change driven is frustrating because back in, you know, I don't know if you guys remember how old you guys are, but when I was younger, it was global warming was the
ozone layer.
Yeah.
In middle school. Yeah.
Yeah. It was global warming, the keynote message.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which that's the way they framed it. Right. And this was Al Gore, you know, who was telling everybody basically consuming, things that are oil-based, right? You know, the we're not using gas, you know, which comes from the ground, you know, and so that they were, but all the while he was flying his jet across the country telling people this, that fossil fuels is the number one destroyer of the ozone layer and the burning of fossil fuels, right? And it's become a really, to me, the worst part about his message has been the fact that he can look you straight in the eye and lie to you. And he has no problem doing that because we know all along that his big message about supposedly reining in, you know, which sounded a little bit more realistic, or at least it made more sense, not to say that I agreed with it, was, I guess fossil fuels, yeah, they're dirtier burning, right? Coal-based especially too. So it makes sense. But all they were doing was trying to create this fear and literally somehow emotionally you tie you to saying, yeah, we need to figure out how to do that. And at the same time, he had nothing. There was no real working with the economy or the people that actually produce energy to figure out cleaner ways, which the industry, even just for efficiency's sake, has already been working on those things. It's in their best interest to provide a better, more efficient, cost effective, cleaner, right? All those things. I don't know anybody who says, yeah, I want dirtier, non-efficient energy, right? Everybody wants more efficient, cleaner. There's actually a book that I've been meaning to read. I bought it. It's called Smaller, let me get it real quick. And from Robert Bryce, I've said before, knowledge is power. It's called Smaller, Faster, Lighter, Denser, Cheaper. And he just makes the argument, look, this is not an issue that's partisan. It shouldn't be a partisan issue, right? Everybody wants cleaner energy. Everybody wants efficient energy. But my point in mentioning that is this whole idea of climate change now they changed the buzzword, is it looks you in the eye and it has you afraid, puts them in the driver's seat with the policies, and they're actually making us poorer in the process.
It's killing the economy.
It's destroying the economy. Who is the one that suffers the most? Should be the number one question. When you use government to force a market to change its ways, like really quick, without any real logistics like Gavin Newsom saying 2026, no more fossil fuel engines. Crazy. Like these people are crazy.
It's not even realistic at that point. And they don't even have a plan for it. And right now you're mentioning Al Gore with all the global warming, concerns that he had. Well, it's funny that they all get richer at the same time while it's killing the economy.
Excellent.
And then they're saying that California is going to be underwater, but they continue to buy mansions, multi-million-dollar mansions by the beaches. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't make any sense. It makes sense that they're for them. They just keep getting wealthier and wealthier as the rest of middle class, lower class gets poorer.
That's right. So you hit it in the nail on the head. And so so they're crushing our economy, and it's the lower income folks that are suffering the most with these policies, right? You take away fossil fuels, which is the cheapest, from third world countries, you're basically starving them to death. You're crushing their economy. You're telling them right now you have some countries that they burn dung for heat, right? They burn basically human waste. That's not healthy. You can have fossil fuels through a very, and it's funny because now the current fossil fuel production is way cleaner. I mean, we're still buying gas. Now we have higher octane, which is basically when you put your nose out the back, not to say that you should, it's, you could barely smell it, right? Before you could smell it. You go to Mexico where it's petroleo, it's a lot dirtier, it's thicker, right? It burns not as efficient, but it's cheaper in that sense. Either way, relative, separate from that, you're still having, basically a cleaner form of energy, even though it's fossil fuels. And if there's a market change, that market change needs to happen from the private sector, not government. Government just messes everything up, right? Because they're not people that are in the business world. They're not engineers. They're not scientists. They're not doctors. They're not individuals that understand the dynamics of this and do the deep dive. They just have the idea and it sounds good and they make it into a buzzword. So anyway, that was a long-winded way of saying is we need to be energy independent. Mm-hmm. We need to let the market figure out how to be cleaner. We need to preserve the interest of the economy of our country, because energy independence isn't just about the economy. It actually is about national security. If we don't have the energy, right, we just gave away a bunch of our supply chain. We limited it, right? We don't allow permitting and leases anymore, right? Or they totally limited them. But then they're our own petroleum reserves. The U.S.'s reserves are down to very low. I mean, God forbid we ever get attacked. Are we going to have even the energy to defend ourselves, right? Because all the equipment that we have, right, these tanks and all the airplanes, I mean, they all require fossil fuels to run. There's not electric jets. It just, you know what I mean? So it's just the reality that there's no real practical perspective from the left from the hyper left doing this. And climate change, the last point I'll make, there's no real measurement to what they're trying to achieve. They're not saying, hey, once we reach this point, we're good, right? Yeah. They always put it out there as this very relative, very general, like, we want to have policies to better the climate. Well, what does it mean to better the climate, right? I mean, when you're making something, right, if your car, you want it to be more efficient or you want to get more miles per gallon, they have a way of creating some kind of a formula and say, okay, this is our current scenario. We're going to try to figure out how to get to from a 35 mile a gallon vehicle, we're going to go to 25 miles a gallon. I'm sorry, 45 miles or 55 miles, right? We're going to figure that out. And we're going to show you how it's still going to cost you less money for the 55 miles versus the 35 miles because we are more efficient, right? It burns cleaner. It burns better, right? The technology is advancing so it can burn better. There's none of that with climate change. There's no goalpost that says once we reach, and everybody can understand what that goalpost is.
Mm-hmm. Right now that you're talking about that, I actually heard this a couple of days ago. There's a country where they're going to slaughter a bunch of cows for the same reason, for the greenhouse gases. And if we don't nip this in the bud, we don't have a representative that nips it in the bud, we can potentially get to that point here in the United States,
right,
where they start, wanting to slaughter, cattle or, whatever animals that, used to feed us, So it's a real slippery slope and dangerous one if we don't put a stop to it.
And to your point, Daniel, if there's no way to measure government success, then they can do whatever they want. It'll be the Ronald Reagan days when he spoke and he said in that speech, really profound speech, A Time for Choosing, I recommend people look it up. He says, basically that the actuarial head back in the day when Medi-Cal was, I'm sorry, Social Security was on the ropes. They were in $1 million. I don't know how many million, I can't remember, but there were millions of dollars in deficit. That means they were in the hole. The actuarial head was on record publicly saying it's okay if we're in the hole, because as long as we have the power to tax, we can always add to it whatever we've lost. Basically, we can always take more from the people, whatever we're missing. Like, that is a dangerous perspective, but that is the reality of a lot of people in government. They're like, it's okay if we're in debt, we'll just tax the people. And every time they tax with inflation and all these things, all you're doing is now you're shouldering that debt, not in just our children, but our children's children and their next generations are going to have to pay for that. So there's no balancing of the budget mindset in Washington, D.C. They just did a $4 trillion, another increase, right? This big budget bill. It's dangerous the way that these people are thinking. There's no accountability. And so back to the point, energy independence needs to be a very clear solution. And ultimately, I think it needs to be part of the plan to rein in these agencies that are or these individuals that are trying to basically steal from the poor people, the ones that are going to suffer the most.
I totally agree with that. And I think one thing that you said that's important to emphasize is that when it comes to energy and independence, we're at the weakest we've ever been. And I think this is one of the things that I think even Biden, I think it was a mistake that he made in saying that even our ammunition like reserves are low. So because you had kind of said, like, if anyone wanted to attack us or try to do something to us, I mean, this administration has set us up just for that, and it's not to sound exaggerated or like I'm fear mongering, but yeah, it feels like it. You can see that it's like the weakest we've probably ever been. I feel like we're unprepared for anything right now at this point. We've been weakened by the people that should be leading us.
That's right. Yep. Yeah. And that's why I appreciate you guys, because you guys are about educating the public. And, I think people need to understand how much power they carry. They really do have a lot of power, the people, but they have to believe in themselves enough to get involved. And fine, this is a lot of information. It's hard to digest in the beginning, but But if you know, basically corruption advances when the people fall asleep and they don't hold government accountable. And technically speaking, an elected, it's funny because most people don't realize also is an elected, their job is to be the eyes and ears of people for government abuse. Like, our government, according to the Constitution, was created to literally be the chains. I'm trying to remember which founder said, but he said to bind them down with the from mischief with the chains of the Constitution. The Constitution is literally supposed to be the chains to anchor down anybody who's intent to abuse. That's why the Bill of Rights, actually, they call them negative rights, because if you read, it's a shall not, right? Congress shall not, or what is it? I have it right here.
infringe.
It's, you know, Congress shall not, I was thinking of the First Amendment. Shall make no law. I'm sorry. That's where I lost it. Congress shall make no law. It's saying there's not going to be any law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom. So it's talking about the other five freedoms, right? Speech, press, association. So they're negative rights because it says shall make no law. The Second Amendment, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed, you know? Mm-hmm. Amendment number 3, no soldier shall in times of peace be quartered in any house. Anyways, if you read through all the individual amendments, they're actually rights that say government can't do this.
Right.
Like whatever it's talking about, that thing, government can't do that. It's limiting government. It's saying, hey, by the way, and actually if you read the preamble of the Bill of Rights, it specifically says, in order to prevent misconstruction or abuse of its powers, that further declaratory and restrictive causes should be added, and as extending the ground of public confidence in the government will best ensure the beneficent ends of the institution. Basically, it's saying these Bill of Rights were written specifically to say, just in case you don't know what we mean, these actual other amendments are to actually say even clearer, these amendments specifically are rights that you don't have, government. The people have them. And, and actually that speaks to the, trying to remember that, I want to say it's the 9th or the 10th amendment.
The 9th, I believe is basically stating like, even if they're not written on here, you still have more rights than this.
Yeah.
And then the 10th is, the state and the people have the power.
That's awesome. I love it. I love it mi gente do their homework. That's awesome. So it's the 10th Amendment. You're right. The power not delegated to the United States by the Constitution nor prohibited by it to the states are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. That, in a little bit of a complex way, it's saying any right that you can assume exists, government, just know by default it goes right to the people. It belongs to them. So if you say, hey, there's a new right that we think exists, guess what? Because it's not written in the Constitution, so anything not written here automatically belongs to the states or to the people. Technically, they're referencing the people. So it's really profound. People need to know that. They need to know that. And a lot of these things that have changed have been because people have abused it. The government has, people in office, and because the people aren't obviously paying attention, then it's easy to take advantage of something when they're not paying attention.
Yeah. And then one thing that, because you said when you started how, you know, the people need to understand they have the power. Danny has all along said, you know, we're the majority, right? Yeah. And it's true because the whole Bud Light thing, you know, the majority is winning that. Yeah. Sound of Freedom, they didn't want that one out. But the majority, you know, I think it hit 100 million this week. Yeah. So the majority speaking out on that. And, you know, here in California, when the SB 14, I'm going blank, when they didn't pass it at first.
The human trafficking.
The third strike. How it didn't pass. And then the people were, you know, rightfully so, outraged or upset at that, you know. Even to the point where even Newsom had to be like, whoa, I got to change course here.
Right. You know,
I think he's trying to do that to seem a little, I think he's trying to set himself up for the future. I think he's trying to make himself look appealing to both sides, if you will. But, you know, if the people didn't speak up and then just go, ah, man, we lost another one, or and then just kept it to themselves. That's the thing. It's like we're the majority, right? And one thing that I don't like is being the silent majority.
That's right.
I think we need to stop that. We need to speak up. We need to be the loud majority now, because we've been silent for too long, and it hasn't helped us. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And that's why when that SB 14 thing got revived and got moving again, I was happy, because it's like, yeah, the people are speaking up. Like, this is what it's supposed to be like.
That's where the change comes in, and people are. Yeah.
You know, and one of the things that I've always said too is that when it comes to the kids and people's money, people are going to speak up. And it just happens to be, look, that's a perfect example right there. You know, it was about the kids and they spoke up. But these are good things that are happening, in the sense people would see them as negatives. And I always say this, I always like to look at the positive, you know, being a natural optimist, is that, you know, that they're doing this out in the open. You know, it's opening up people's eyes. So when they open up their eyes in that topic, in that area, it's naturally going to open it up in others. So hopefully it's like a domino effect that's happening. But, you know, I'm looking at that in a positive perspective. So in it, like Daniel said, you know, those are good things that are happening right now. So we can't get down on ourselves in that sense. And basically just to understand and see the validation that we are the majority.
That's right. Agreed. Yeah. I mean, Daniel touched on it a little bit, but yeah, the other one is when it comes down to our border, you know, the human trafficking, you know, it's, mm-hmm. it's been a profound revelation to me, to be honest with you. I've always known there's an issue with the border. You know, my family came illegally, right? They eventually became citizens. They love this country. So do I. I mean, I was born here because of the Reagan amnesty, you know, and all full disclosure. But I love this country. I mean, I read my constitution. I have it right behind me, along with, you know, my time in office serving as a county supervisor. But the thing, I think that the big dynamic shift that's happening, that or at least it's been happening, is the change in mindset when it comes to the border, because human trafficking is becoming such a real thing to individuals, to families, right? They're seeing these things. I've mentioned that to my Democrat family members, and they're like, it's a quiet moment, because what do you say about that, right? When children are being sold like drugs to sex traffickers, right? And then they're, you know, and the Sound of Freedom really brought a revelation to it. All to the point is it really made me think about, and really, you know, want to pray about is so when you think about a port of commerce, right? You think about Oakland, San Francisco, San Diego, right? You know, so there's all these areas where commerce happens, international commerce, right? So it's the big, you know, the separation is the water, the body of water between one country to the next. Technically speaking, we don't have a body of water, obviously, at our southern border in California, but it's still a border, and it's a port now of commerce for people, for children, for women, right? For underage children. And us as Latinos, we can't ignore that. We have to figure out what it means to reconcile that, yes, we want our families to come across that border and enjoy enjoy these liberties. Mm-hmm. We actually need to know what these liberties are, like I said earlier, so that we know how to preserve these very things. Because I wouldn't imagine anybody would cross the border to say, oh yeah, I'm going to go to a country to destroy it, to make it worse. Like, no, I want to enjoy the benefits of it, which means we need to fight to preserve those things that have made it great for other people, right? If we want, mm-hmm. if we want to be able to buy a house, right? If we want to be able to not have to worry about being forced to wear a mask or take a vaccine, right? In communist countries, you don't have a choice. This is not one, right? It shouldn't be, or at least it's starting to look like one. But but anyways, the very things that we enjoy, we have to fight for. We have to preserve. We have to restore, right? I'm a Christian man, and I believe in reconciliation. I definitely do believe there's an opportunity to reconcile with the Latino community that's come over and come up with a solution for that. So, you know, some kind of a solution for an illegal. But there's got to be a citizenship taking, you know, basically a sentiment to take ownership over your citizenship. to say, yes, I want to be a citizen. And maybe we need to clean up that process to make it easier, but easier as far as time, not easier as far as basically taking ownership, like meaning you're going to come here, you're going to prove that you want to preserve the very things that made this nation great, right? You're going to understand the Constitution. You're going to understand your rights. You know, you're going to try to make sure that you know the rule of law, right? What are the laws of the land to make sure you preserve those so everybody else benefits. Otherwise, what we have is what we have in Europe, where it's a very tribal system, right? You have different nationalities, different nations living in Europe, and there's no, you know, you basically, and I don't know if you guys followed Europe, but they've actually had these like autonomous zones where you have kind of this segment of people, this ethnicity, like Muslims or you know, different types of religions, and they literally create this little world right there in Europe where they have authority to enact their own laws that are separate from that nation. Mm-hmm. Like, that doesn't make any sense when you have different laws under the same country, right?
Yeah. I've heard of them. They call them no-go zones because the authorities from that country or that city can't even go in there.
That's right.
Because they have their own laws, like you mentioned.
And that's a tribal system.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Isn't that like, I think France, right? They were having those riots.
That's right.
Wasn't it kind of really? It's related to that, right?
Yeah. I think part of what's triggered the riots too was there was a change that Macron made where he wanted to increase the years when they could
retirement
retirement because they have a different system over there where you know government takes care of you the moment you retire. And that's why they have these long, you know, you get 2 months off and you still get paid to be able to go on, I think they call it holiday, right? You take off your month and, you know, so anyways, but back to the whole immigration thing is we need to close up that border, come up with a simpler process. Yes. Make it easier in the sense of understanding what is the process. And how you know, setting the expectation of how long it's going to take for them to become citizens, right? Maybe there should be another Bracero program for the workers, right? And maybe there should also be some kind of another process for a simpler process, really, which when it comes down to asylum seekers. Mm-hmm. But bottom line, efficient, transparent, you know, agreeable to this country, right, to the majority of the population, because this is going to be something we'd have to debate at the House. But it's got to be something that, yes, preserves the interest of this nation first.
Yeah. And it has to be clear and concise, something that you can understand.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, I meet tons of people, Latinos and otherwise, that aren't here legally, and they do love this country. They want to know what it means to love it more.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when I you know, when I'm out there talking in Espanol to potential voters, and they don't know about the Bill of Rights, they don't know about the stuff that we mentioned, inalienable rights, separation of powers, due process, you're innocent before proven guilty. In Mexico, you're guilty before proven innocent.
Yeah.
If they assume you're in trouble or you did something wrong, they'll throw you in jail to find out if you did something wrong, and then they'll let you out of jail to say, no, you didn't do anything wrong. That's not our country. In our country, you have to work really hard to prove someone's guilt, because then at least when you throw them in jail, it's because you actually found out that they are guilty. You're not just saying we're going to throw a ton of innocent people in jail. It's a different system that when Latinos understand, I think they'll fight to protect it.
Really interesting too, because there's a reason why all these people from other countries, and specifically, let's say, Mexico, want to come to the United States, but they don't know the reasons behind why they want to come over. And it's basically everything that you're saying. So they have to be educated in that sense so that they can protect it. Right. You said it earlier, who wants to come to a country and turn it into the country they just came from?
That's right.
It makes absolutely no sense whatsoever.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Amen.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if you had anything else to share, Danny, but I was going to move on to the my next goal so this is actually very personal because I've dealt with the abuse of this at the local level, and it has to do with the lack of understanding of where the power resides as far as, you know, so basically the what are the authorities given under the Constitution to the three branches, right? Mm-hmm. The simple reality is the legislative writes the laws, right? The executive executes those laws, and the judicial interprets those laws, meaning they're going to try to beat it up to find out if it actually stands the constitutional test, right? Which is an awesome system. And it's funny because it actually, as a Christian, it makes me really proud because the three branch government is actually in our Bible. I don't know if people that are Christians realize that, right? I think it's Isaiah, I want to say 22, but it says, the Lord is our lawgiver, the Lord is our judge, the Lord is our king, he will save us. In history, the king was the executive, right? Mm-hmm. In our country, the king was actually taken off of the throne. People don't know that, in the sense that you do have an executive who plays kind of the individual that basically oversees executing the laws, but he's considered a citizen. He's not a monarch. It actually specifically states in the Constitution he can't be a monarch or it can't be, what am I thinking? High society, high class, a system where, you know, for those, again, back to the whole, because, you know, our founders did come from Europe. The system of nobles, right? Where you have kind of these monarchs, these power, you know, over here, you would call them the elites, right? They're the people that have a lot of power. Mm-hmm. They have a lot of influence. They have a lot of money, so they can buy influence, right? That's not our country. In our country, the president is just a citizen. That's all he has power. So he's actually, that's why, and it requires the citizen to run the military, right? So he can technically declare war, but he's a citizen doing that. So it's pretty profound because he can't turn the military on his own country. He doesn't have that right to. And that's why there's an appropriations process that every 2 years, you have to re-sign up basically that budget to make sure that you can fund the military. Because there's the checks and balances that takes that power away from the executive. So if a president tries to all of a sudden do this crazy stuff and take control of his own country with his military, our government actually says your constitution does not allow you to do that. Every 2 years you have to reapply for that funding. That's where they have the National Defense Authorization Act. So it's pretty profound stuff. They thought through a lot of different things to make this system work.
You know, and the reason they did that is because they suffered from all of that. So they had it fresh in their minds, and they were taking notes.
That's right.
We've forgotten, you know. What's that saying? Good times make weak men, and difficult times make strong men.
Yeah.
Amen.
Yeah. No, and then, you know, kind of what you're talking about, you know, it kind of feels like, you know, we're kind of going through that because you see this two-tiered system, right, where it feels like people are above the law, right? And these institutions that are in place that should be making sure that that's not happening feels like they're contributing to them too. So, you know, it's definitely something that I think you're kind of leading to is like their authorities definitely need to be clarified and make sure that they're, you know, being held to that. Nothing more, nothing less. Because right now, I think it's a bunch of overreach, and people.
We're seeing it real time right now.
We're seeing it real time. Yeah.
Yeah, we're seeing it with Hunter Biden, Joe Biden, everything that's coming out. Trump's
been indicted. He's gonna go on his third one already, I think, or something like that.
So, yeah, he's on his third one. So to bring it back to what I was mentioning is, so as a county supervisor, right, a month after the lockdown. So I did agree as a county supervisor to shut down because we didn't know what this virus was. Everybody was scared, right? You know, people were spraying down their groceries with, what's it called? Sanitizer liquid or whatever. People were worried and it was a very real fear. All of us had it. It was a scary time. And I'm blown away that God would, I guess in that sense, I should be honored that the Lord would allow me to be in a position of authority in the middle of the toughest times, I would argue. I was engaged and I was focused by God's grace. And so I would I was intentional in trying to reach out to my public health officer to work with me. Like, okay, explain this to me. How are you telling me that a small business is non-essential and needs to shut down, while a brick and mortar that's all it is basically a bigger version of that small business, right? Like Target or Costco can stay open. They have more people in there. Technically, there's more risk because there's more people, right? There's more, if there's more virus, then it's going to spread amongst a lot more people faster. And a small brick and mortar, and that was my argument to the public health officer publicly, was small businesses don't have that issue. They actually can limit it, which I've seen it. Small businesses, even before the shutdowns were happening, you had some businesses saying, one person at a time come into my shop, right? You come in and you got to wear a mask, right? And I have a mask, and they put up a glass and all this stuff, right? Everybody wants to be super safe. But the economy needed to keep moving because people get sick from other things. And if they can't go to the doctor because now they're delaying treatment and all these things, people are going to suffer. People that have heart conditions and all this stuff, right? So at the end of the day, it didn't make sense. So I challenged the health officer. He was technically an administrator of the state per se, even though we hired him under the law of state, the California state law, he was given the authority to, or he's required basically that we need to have a public health officer on staff in the middle of a pandemic. So we were required to do that and we hired him. But that doesn't mean he has the authority. And my point to him was, work with me, help me figure this out. These businesses are ready to figure out how to make it safe, but don't just say, we're going to shut you down. And then they started coming out with the color coded and all this other stuff. So I dealt with it personally. I saw it through OSHA, right, where the governor was using OSHA to threaten businesses. Hey, by the way, now there's workplace safety. We're going to add the viruses, something in the air to workplace safety, which OSHA has never done before, right? OSHA normally would deal with, basically safety situations where, you know, you can't carry a certain amount of weight, or, you know, there's a ladder, you can't, you know,
be tied off, secured, all that good stuff.
Tied down, and yeah, you got to have fire extinguishers and all these other things.
PPE,
So that OSHA came in, they even used ATF, they used, local police. Now all of a sudden they became the mass police. In my county, they had a hotline, an anonymous hotline, so now you can snitch on your neighbors. And all of a sudden businesses were being narked on and businesses were being shut down. So it was very scary times, and the government just made it worse. So to the point, there needs to be a reining in of these administrative agencies. There needs to be, I think, a stripping of authority of state level agencies and there needs to be a restoring of local control that says any agency that enters into our county, it's still under the guise of our local board of supervisors, which are locally elected, for them to be able to dictate the rules. And if we don't, basically we need to force the state to have a relationship with the local authorities to be able to work together. And it's got to make sense. The public needs to be involved in the conversation, right? The best sanitizing solution is the sun, right? Sunlight. So we need sunlight on all these things. And these agencies, people don't realize there's actually laws that they're basically writing. They won't call them laws. They have a code, right? OSHA has a code, right? The FDA, all these agencies, the CDC, they have codes, right? Mm-hmm. That it's their own norms and their own rules for how they practice.
Their regulations.
But they're their own. Yeah, they're basically their own regulations. But those regulations are still requirements on its local body. So if the CD or if OSHA says something that you have to do, safety a certain way, then they'll tell the locals, hey, this is what you got to do. And my own attorney, my own local attorney, is basically telling me, Peter, we got to do what the state says. And I'm like, yeah, I don't care what the state says. I wasn't elected by them. I was elected by my locals. That doesn't make sense to me. And yeah, I did. Obviously my county council didn't like that. And my own supervisors, Peter, what are you doing? I'm like, you guys don't realize how much power you're giving away to the state, and you're making yourself seem very impotent. You're not even capable of solving your own problems. You're waiting for the life raft of the state to solve your problems while you're drowning, right? You're waiting for a long distance relationship to save you when you have your locals here that can actually fix the problem, because we have money and we have resources, but you're not allowing us to use it because you're worried about the state.
But you know what the issue too is that they do it under the guise of trust the science, believe the science.
Yep.
But even it's coming out that that science wasn't even accurate science anymore.
Yep.
At what point do they stop and go, wait, let's really look at this science and see if it's factual?
Amen.
Yeah.
So, you know, and that's the question that I've always had is that why is it that these agencies put out mandates, and what really is a mandate? You know, it's not a law, it's not a requirement, but like to your point, everybody that was fighting you wanted to follow these mandates. They wanted to follow these instructions. They wanted to follow this science that had been laid out without questioning it whatsoever.
That's right. Amen. That's such a good point. And you're right. And I appreciate that you said that because you're making the distinction that a mandate doesn't mean it's a law. You know, you can tell me what you want me to do all day long. Unless it's codified in the constitutional law that literally says this has been signed and sealed, we've done our homework, and this is why you have to do it, there is no have to do anything. And that's mm-hmm. how schools were abusing the process because they were saying, well, it's a mandate. Tell me where that mandate is tied to an actual law. And then they would try to come up with they try to anchor it to something. Oh, well, OSHA. Here's the law, Peter. It's OSHA. Supervisor Hernandez, it's here it is. OSHA is not a lawmaking body. Why are you pointing me to OSHA? Mm-hmm. OSHA has zero authority over the law. Their job is to implement any laws that were codified prior to them by the legislature, whether it's the state or the locals, right? Mm-hmm. So all these things have been just flipped around on its head as far as the actual authority. And definitely I'm very, very hungry to strip them of that authority because they're growing in numbers and the bigger the government, because they're shadow agencies, right? They work, you know, and just for analogy's sake, they do work in the dark, right? Where they write rules, you're not paying attention to those rules. I mean, look at AB 665, although that is a legislative bill. You know, AB 957 also, actually, I think it's 957, the one that it amends the family code, and family code is under the judicial system that basically says if you're not an affirming parent that affirms the gender change, right? Their gender, if they want to change their gender, if in a custody battle, you're not affirming that child, then you lose your custody rights. You basically lose your parents' rights. That's done through the family code. Maybe that was a bad example, but you know, you have actually another example is the EPA under the Chevron doctrine. And that's actually something that I recommend your audience to follow, to look up the Chevron doctrine. The Chevron doctrine is specifically anchored to having to do with the EPA trying to rewrite law when it comes down to, you know, fossil fuel extraction. So they set certain requirements that made it super hard for companies to be able to, you know, basically pull oil from the ground. So mm-hmm. it ended up, you know, it always basically put a lot of delay and cost, and it made it more technical and complicated, ultimately making it hard for a company to get things done, to, you know, to do their job. So that's supposed to come forward before the Supreme Court. They expect it to strike it down because the Chevron doctrine by default means is they're looking to redefine or clarify, I should say, like we spoke earlier, it's actually looking to clarify what is the authority of the EPA as an executive agency under the basically under the president, right? The executive of the three branch government. So EPA doesn't have lawmaking power, but I read already one of the opinions under the Chevron doctrine, actually have it saved. It specifically mentions that they are, not only are they not a lawmaking power, but they're using basically nuanced terminology to change that to ultimately implement what becomes a new law without saying that it's a law. They're mm-hmm. according to them, they're trying to implement, but in reality, they're writing new laws. So that Supreme Court case is intended to rein them in and say, nope, you can't do this anymore because you're doing things that don't belong to you, and ultimately, as a you know, Supreme Court, the judicial branch, it's their job to rein in constitutional abuses. There's just so many examples of abuse of administrative agencies I would argue the bigger the government, it's become its own. And, you know, I do a lot of homework. So just listening to Dr. Larry Arndt, he basically says is now officially you have administrative agencies having their own self-interest in existence or in existing. Mm-hmm. They have a reason to exist. And it has nothing to do with representation. Because if you think about it, they have power, they have money, and they can do whatever they want with it. Yeah. That by default puts them in a position to always want to protect that power. Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's like what I do, right, with work. I deal with OSHA, right? Well, you know, when things happen, I deal with them. And just kind of relating it to what you just said, it's like there's times where, you know, they'll tell us it's already happened. Oh, there's nothing wrong. You guys, as a company, no violation. You know, you guys did everything you could, but we're still going to fine you. And it's like, all right, what's the point? And then, and like you said, it's like they have their interest, right? I'm pretty sure they got to make some kind of money to keep all their people going. And it just becomes about that. And you don't even trust that, you know, you don't trust OSHA no more. You don't trust the EPA, the CDC, because they didn't do anything that was in the best interest for the people. They just do what's going to keep them in power. And a lot of the times they go unchecked. And I think that's what you're getting at is we got to put that check, that balance with those places. And like you said, limit them because, yeah, it just makes the government feel way bigger. And, you know, we definitely don't want that.
Yeah. Part of it. I mean, sorry, go ahead, Daniel.
No, what I was going to say for, you know, maybe people that are listening to us right now, the best way to put it in perspective for them is like, even if at work, you know, certain departments have budgets, right? So at the end of the year, they go around, you know, a certain department might go around saying, hey, you know, we have so much money in the budget, we need to spend it so that we can increase it, you know, next quarter or next year. It's the same thing. And, so, you know, they need to be incentivized to keep the budget down so that, you know, they're saving more money instead of spending more money and the department getting bigger. Yep. And, we go back to the checks and balances, maybe incentivizing and keeping it smaller. But I think, you know, people can relate to that, you know, at work and what the government does in these different agencies of the federal government.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Ronald Reagan put it best, I think. He said, the more the planners fail, the more the planners plan. and that's just the reality is in our government, failure is a step up. It mm-hmm. literally gives you an opportunity because you're not measured against your success. You're just measured against the work you do, right? So it's busy work. You could write up a bunch of papers, you could do a bunch of studies, you can spend a bunch of money and get nothing done with it, and you're still considered, you know, to a certain extent viable, like they still need you because mm-hmm. the self-interest is there for them to keep just doing busy work, right? I mean, I can't tell you when I've read certain things from as a supervisor, I'm like, this is stupid. This makes no sense. Like, why are we even doing this? Well, and then they'll give me a long explanation. There's all this historical evidence. There's all these different things happening. But there's no real, it comes down to government has no reason to exist or prove its existence on its own. Yeah. In a constitutional government, government has a reason to exist under the guise of the people that gave it life and ultimately gave it power. And that power is on loan temporarily with the expectation that there will be results. So there's a looped relationship with the people. The moment you separate the people from its government, it's no good. It's useless. It literally becomes worthless because it'll abuse. It'll take advantage of you.
You just reminded me of a boss I used to have, you know, when I first started working, and he would say there's people that fail, right? They're always going to fail at what they do, but then there's other people that fail and excel at it.
That's right. So,
they go above and beyond the fail. And it's like, yeah, when you're saying that, I thought of that. And I just, yeah, that's what the government is. They just fail, but they go, they double down. let's get worse.
Yeah. So when it comes, I guess when it comes down to the administrative agencies, my goal is to make them prove their worth.
Yeah.
If they can't prove it, I'm not going to fund it. It's that simple. Government's got to make, we got to shrink. I mean, it's kind of the cliche drain the swamp, but it is. There needs to be a draining of the swamp. And it's funny how it gives you a visual of a swamp, because the swamp is, in, you know, it's infested, it's infected, it's like pus. It's basically, there needs to be some kind of a cleaning out of that process.
There's swamp monsters.
We got
plenty of those.
Getting rid of the swamp monsters for sure. So, and okay. all that ties down to, you know, I'll leave it with my kind of final thought is what I've mentioned earlier is the more I think about what's going on with the problems in our government, the more I think about is the government or the people in power have little to no faith in the people. They have, you know, my honest opinion, and this is me talking to a lot of electeds, people in office, government officials, right? You know, administrative agencies. I'm like, you really don't have faith in the people. Because if you did, you wouldn't try to control them so much. You know, granted, the public doesn't fully understand, but to a certain extent, you're only making things worse. And you're, you know, by default, the public is only, you know, they're the ones suffering the most. And they're the ones that are being apathetic or disengaged, right? They're frustrated. So they don't want to pay attention, right? They have less reason to pay attention. I think politics could be actually really fun and really cool, because if someone's in office that's representing you and doing a good job and you're seeing the benefits where your community is safer, right? Your roads are fixed, right? You're seeing, you know, opportunity for your children. Who wouldn't want to say that is awesome? Like, I want to learn the goodness of our country because I want others to understand how to preserve it. I mean, when it comes down to anything in this world, it's going to break down on its own, right? We have to work to keep it restored, right? We always have to stay engaged to keep it restored. It's the same thing with our government. We have to constantly work to keep it restored. And I think what it comes down to do that, it really is my honest conviction, is the people are the ones that are going to fix it. I'm going to help facilitate that process. But it's all about, you know, I'm a business owner. I always lean back on that. And God's given me, I think, a blessing and understanding that if I want my business to succeed, there's no better avenue for me to succeed as a business owner than to provide for my customers what they want, right? They're going to pay for it because it's a good thing. They enjoy it. If they compare me to my competitor and say, yeah, I like Peter's product better, it's because I'm working my butt off to make sure that they're getting what they want. I think that's how policy should be. And, you know, but it's an honest way. It's not saying the Bernie Sanders process of, oh, I just want everybody's loan to be forgiven. No, I want you to understand, look, if you're asking me to forgive loans, then you're asking me to basically forgive people's choices, right? People are going to make these decisions, spend money, get into debt. Maybe they got into a wrong career path. There's not going to be any self-correction for a university that just says, hey, come on board. I feel like the universities are the new drug dealers. They're like, come on board. We got these classes for you. Don't worry about it. We got affirmative action money. We can put you in this class. You might not be good enough yet for it right now. You don't have enough, you know, you haven't gone to school long enough, but let's put you in anyways, right? Then you get the Joy Reads of the world that are saying, hey, I'm here because of affirmative action. I didn't really deserve it. I just got it because of my skin color, right? It's like, it's literally creating more and more of a self-interest mindset. Mm-hmm. And it has less and less about quality, you know, ultimately excellence, right? About what's better, right? Whatever we do in our lives, it should be about excellence, making things better, right? That means we have to put faith where it belongs. First, I would argue in God, and then second, in the very people that we're supposed to serve, right? I mean, even the Bible says, you know, to love your neighbor, you know, the two greatest commandments, to love God with the heart, soul, and mind, and two is to love your neighbor as yourself. That's a capitalistic sentiment. That means if I'm a business owner, I want to provide for you something that's good for you, something that you can enjoy. I work hard to make your life better, to, you know, whether it's some kind of a solution for a disease, some kind of a product for your, you know, your, for when it comes to driving, like your vehicles, right? The efficiency, anything that has to do with an opportunity to make your life better, that is a blessing to be able to do that. And I think that means the market corrections will fix themselves, right? Because the people will solve their own problems. Ultimately, they're the drivers in the, you know, in the vehicle. And us as the elected officials, it's our jobs to just make sure we facilitate a process that is equal under the law for everybody. That means everybody has equal opportunity, not equal benefit, right? Because not everybody is as skilled as others, right? Some people have certain skills than others, but at least we create that opportunity for people to be able to be the best that they can be and to use their passions to better our country and ultimately to better our communities.
Yeah. Yeah. I think one thing that I kind of thought of right now as you were talking is, you know, I think people that go into government, it's like when a kid grows up with their parent and then they become old enough, right? They learn from their parents, right? What their parents have or had or didn't have. And then, you know, in their mind, they go, okay, my parents did this. I want to do this to make it better for my kids. And then hopefully that my kids, when they grow, they want to do more than what I did, right? And I think people that go into government should have that mentality. It's like, okay, it was good here, but no, we can make it better. And then the guy that comes after that, no, I could do better than that. And like you said, if people go in with that mentality and serve in government that way to better the people, and it would do what it's intended to do. But, you know, like you said, it's tough because they're not doing that. It doesn't feel like they're doing that. There's not many of them doing that.
Well, right? It goes to Peter's point is that with all these regulations from all these agencies, that's what's killing the economy. Real capitalism is you have a good product, there's going to be demand for it, and you're going to thrive. Mm-hmm. You have a product that isn't good, no one's going to buy it, you're going to fail. And then you get an opportunity to refine whatever your product was or maybe find something else. And then you come back up. People, you know, there's demand for your product. You become successful. But the way that the system is right now with all these regulations and it's not real capitalism right now. We're not experiencing real capitalism in any way, shape, or form, you know, that you want to think about it. The way that you put it right now, Daniel, and the way that Peter explained it earlier. So, you know, that's the only way that it's going to happen is, you know, by people like Peter, you know, that just basically outline, you know, what his top priorities are. That's the only way that's going to happen. Yeah. People need to understand that.
For sure.
Yeah. And I want to be there on a short term. I really do. Like, this has taken a lot out of me to do all this. But it's out of love for my country. It really is. I mean, I'm praying for the day, guys, that people that run for office, they run out of a love for service and out of a love for seeing their country better than the way that they're, you know, basically their progenitors, right? They're before them, the people that they walk in their footsteps to make that life better for everybody. And it's sad because right now that's not happening. I mean, right now people are, sorry about the noise. Someone's messing around outside.
It's all good.
So, I feel like right now people are making politics a lifelong career.
Mm-hmm.
And it should never be a career. I think politics should never be a career. I mean, as far as being elected office, should not be a lifelong career ever. The more I think about it, really, if our job is to rein in the government and to make it better, to make it function for the people, then we have to have a short-term perspective that says, I'm one, you know, as more, I'm using it more as symbolically, right? I don't mean literally. I'm like a soldier that serves a tour of duty, right? I'm going to do a tour. I'm going to be in there for a little bit. I'm going to push back on the government that's basically doing things that are harming my community. I'm going to change things. I'm going to simplify things. And then I'm going to get out. Because if I'm not in there forever, then I'm not going to accrue power. I'm not going to accrue money, right? I'm not going to accrue influence. I'm going to be there on a short term. And I'm going to get ready the next person behind me to take my place. Because the more you see people short term there, then the less there's going to be this power grab of people taking control, right? The few taking control of the many. That should never happen. And that's, I think, because of the lifelong politician's perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It opens the door to corruption, period.
Yeah. It does. 100%. Yeah. I want to be like George Washington and just, I want to retire early. And it's funny because they asked him to be king at first, right?
Mm.
He became president because people kept asking him to. And he just said, I'm done. You know, I don't want, he was done and he wanted, that's why they specifically made it. I think it was 3 terms prior, but now mm-hmm. it's only 2 terms, right?
Yeah. No, I think there should definitely be some term limits in Congress for sure.
I'm 100% for that.
You know, or at least something where I think it's Brazil where, and I think this is their presidential thing, is you can serve 2 terms. And then after those 2 terms, you know, you can't run again for like another 2 terms. But if you want to, you know, come back in 8 years and try again, you can. I think something like that for Congress, at least, where it's like you mix in people and or just set straight term limits. You know what? No more than 8 terms.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Well, the terms are 2 years. So yeah. I would say no more than 6 terms, 12 years, I think.
Yeah, that's good too.
Yeah. 12 to 15 years, more than enough. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't want to be 70 years old in there. I don't. I want to be able to have enough life, God willing, to enjoy my family. And, you know, it's a lot of sacrifice to run for office. It really is, guys. I mean, my kids don't see me all the time. You know, I'm all over the place. And you're put on committees. You're on all these, you're dealing with all these meetings. You're traveling. It's taxing. But again, I could see myself doing a tour of duty, and focusing on first things first, start to unwind craziness and, restore power back to the people.
Can I ask you a random question?
Sure.
Would you ever consider running for governor of California?
If the Lord called me to it, I would do whatever the Lord asked me to do.
Yeah. I think California needs someone like you too. To run for governor. I think, you know, I think a lot of the people we get aren't, you have to have, we've been talking about it recently. It's like, you have to have a certain level of toughness, right? Not always be so nice, but you know, sometimes you got to get in a sense mean, but not in a mean way, just strong. And I feel like a lot of people that have run for governor, you know, on the Republican side, at least don't have that, you know, where
fighter. I think the way that fighter. We put it is a fighter spirit.
Yeah. So, you know, that's after you're done with Congress, you know.
I stand on principle. I mean, that's what makes my life easier. Honestly, I lean on the Lord a lot, obviously. But I stand on principle and it makes it easier. And then I'm honest with people. I'm saying, look, you have to be around a little bit to know when someone puts their arm around you and they hand you a check, right? To be careful. And if they do that, and I'm like, look, if you want to donate to my campaign, awesome. Don't expect anything from me. Because if you do, then I'd rather you keep your money. I'm just letting you know because I have principles and I'm not going to change. I'm just not. I know what is good and true. I'm not perfect. I mean, I still could learn more, obviously. I'm still learning a lot more. But what I do feel firm about, it's kind of like defining the role of the position. You have to define the role of the relationship with people and make it easier for them to know. Peter's not going to budge on this. Either stop asking or talk to somebody else. Like, figure out who you can work with. You know, and so on certain things, I'm not going to work with people. You know, I'm not going to work on things that are going to destroy my country, obviously, right? So I'm going to set my limits and I'm going to define those things. And that way, when people start to lobby me, it's like, that makes no sense. I'm not going to go down that road. People get upset, I mean, I guess the simple point is you have to be okay with people not liking you, and you have to be okay with saying no to people, even powerful people, and saying, I'm sorry, but I can't do that. I'm not going to do that. And if they hate me for it, they can. And if they go after me for it, then I need to be ready for it. I need to expect. Yeah.
We talk about it all the time is that we use the example of, you know, who is going to raise to power faster, or who has the likelihood of you know, gaining that power. And the example is you've got an unethical person and then you have an ethical person. You know, someone with morals, without morals, is the one without morals that's unethical. You know, they're gonna take that check and they're gonna rise to the top a lot quicker. So, you know, you being, you know, a truth teller, having principles and morals, and standing on those, you know, hopefully people recognize that and, you know, set you on that path, you know, to getting there.
Yeah. It's God's will. Yeah. I'm trusting in him, and yeah, wherever he has me, I'll be there.
Yeah. Cool. Well, God bless. We hope you get there.
Yeah, for sure.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's great to have you on again. And, you know, like I said, it's 2024, so it's almost less than a year and a half to go.
Yeah.
You know, we'll be here throughout the race, and you know, whatever you need. If you have any other events in San Jose or anything like that, you know, we'll make sure to, you know, pop in.
And yeah, pop in, bring some friends. That would be awesome. Yeah, we're gonna start updating our website. We'll post our events. You can go on HernandezForCongress.com is my website, _ Hernandez for Congress, I believe, Instagram. And yeah, and I'm on Twitter, I'm on Facebook. Very easy to find me. Yeah, you can get one of these cool hats, Legalize Freedom.
Yeah, you sell those? Those are yours?
Yeah, so these are my campaign hats. It has even my logo. Sorry, I always...
Okay.
Yeah, Peter Hernandez for Congress. It says, I am Congressional District 18. Really quick story, because I know we got to go. This hat, it was in a different color. It was after a really long day. I sat down, put the hat on, was kind of just thinking about the day, put my daughter on my lap, and I had a really good dinner. It was after a really tough battle on the dais. In the middle of the lockdowns, I brought forward an informed consent resolution where, you know, basically trying to honor the intent and doing a lot of homework, talking to different people, Children's Health Defense. I don't know if you know Alex Mayer. She's come from the Oscar Mayer family. She was a close friend of Robert Kennedy. She supported me as a local guy, which was really cool. She was the statewide representative for Children's Health Defense. And a lot of folks throughout the community, which wasn't partisan at that sense, because Children's Health Defense is not partisan. But bottom line is I had a big turnout. A lot of people lobbied to support me because I brought forward an informed consent resolution that said, under the emergency use authorization, the law, it requires two things. One is to educate the public on whatever they're taking. If it is experimental, that they have a right to know what they're being given. That's why it's called informed consent. And then the second thing is to require that they have the right to say no. That means we would say, look, we want you to take this, but we're not going to force it down. And this happened before the mandates, the vaccine mandates kicked in. So I felt like, it's just strong in my heart. God, by God's grace, I would argue, he was leading me to see that these mandates were coming. I brought that forward. It was a really tough battle. I didn't win, and I didn't think I was going to win, to be honest. But the important factor was that I did it because I wanted the public to know the truth, and I wanted that to start a conversation, and it did. And that's where, you know, some people would say I became notorious after those things that I was doing. You know, but some people love me for it, right? For trying to fight to do the right thing. And from that, I relish in the fact that God chose me to be in the thick of that fight, and ultimately just trust in him when it comes down to
No, that's great. That's an awesome story. And you know what's nice about it, or the nice thing about time, you know, the truth comes out with time. So now we're at that stage where you were right, and hopefully people are seeing it now. So that's got to turn a lot of heads, and, you know, their ears are going to perk up a little bit more and listen to what Peter has to say.
God was right, and I just listened to him. But, I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, then. Cool. Well, you know, thank you for coming on. And, you know, we'll stay in touch. And, you know, for everybody that tuned in, share this. Let people know about Peter. Because, again, even though he's not going to be in your district specifically, if he's not, he's going to help out the country as a whole. So, you know, we need people like Peter in there. So, again, thank you. And we'll catch you guys on the next one.
Send a donation. I'll send you a hat. God bless you guys.
God bless.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.